From the KEIA Newsroom, I'm Justin Martin. In a few minutes, we'll hear from a Dallas woman who fought the courts to teach an ancestral tradition, hair braiding. We'll start with the new leader of the University of Texas system. William McRaven made his first stop in North Texas today. The retired admiral visited UT Arlington for a meeting with major donors. One of his goals as chancellor, he said, is to make sure that all actions of the UT system are ethical.
Without it, we are dead in the water. With it, and with the goodwill and support of great folks like you, there isn't anything we can't do.
If he sounds like he is talking to military troops, it's because McRaven used to lead the U.S. Special Operations Command. His highest profile mission was directing the raid that killed Osama bin Laden in 2011. The first thing on McRaven's plate, finding a new president for UT in Austin and working through conflicts between the university system and the Texas state legislature. One thing McRaven and other military leaders in Iraq and Afghanistan had to deal with was the rise in blast force injuries. That has medical researchers trying to understand how those injuries are connected to chronic conditions such as post-traumatic stress disorder and traumatic brain injury, or TBI. Today on Think, Chris Boyd talked to science writer Caroline Alexander about how century-old data is helping scientists draw conclusions.
The historical precedent is very much worth paying attention to. First of all, it's from history that we get some indication of what the longitudinal diagnosis of the modern TBI victims might look like. In other words, right now in modern history, that we're still trying to come to terms with this condition. It's very hard to project what fate may or may not await soldiers of today, 10, 20, 30, 40 years out. The data from World War I is at least as imperfect as that data is instructive and indicates that the condition doesn't just vanish. It lingers on and on for decades and even until death. So I think that in this case, it is very important to pay attention to what this 100-year-old, you know, a whole other age away might have to tell us about as we move forward.
Caroline Alexander's story, The Invisible War on the Brain, appears in the February issue of National Geographic. Think reairs tonight at 9, or you can listen to the podcast at kera.org/think. A Dallas businesswoman achieved victory against the state of Texas this month when a federal court ruled against regulations on teaching African hair braiding, judging them unconstitutional. Isis Bradley is the owner of the Institute of Ancestral Braiding in Oak Cliff, and she joins me now to talk about her 20-year battle to teach a centuries-old tradition. Isis Bradley, thanks for joining me.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
What does African hair braiding involve?
African braiding is steeped in culture. So you're talking about people who are interested in having their hair conditioned, those with tightly textured hair, those with curls and coils and kinks. So when you talk about braiding in the schools, which are the traditional schools like cosmetology and barbering schools, it's totally different from what someone does that's a priest or a matriarch of natural hair that study this art.
So how did that lead to police hauling you out of your salon in handcuffs in 1997?
I thought it was crazy. I couldn't believe it when 7 cops came into my salon and said, "You're under an arrest for braiding hair." And I thought it was ridiculous. I even laughed a little. And then she pulled her badge out and said, "Isis, you are under an arrest and please cooperate with us."
Did they tell you why they hauled you out in handcuffs?
Yes, they did. After I got to the jailhouse, I was told that my fine was braiding without a cosmetology license.
Your fight helped change state law before in 2007. Allowing you to operate your salon and get a hair braiding license, but regulations still prevented you from teaching it?
Yes. They knew back in 97 that I was a school, so they didn't want me to operate the school. Well, after 97, I say a good 5 years passed, and I hear anything from the state of Texas. Then finally, in 2005, they said, "We dropped the case." And then in 2007, they grandfathered me, but they grandfathered me to be a braider, to go ahead and have my business legally and operate as a braid artist. But they didn't address me being a teacher, which I had been since 1983.
What kind of rules were they imposing, and why shouldn't they apply to African hair braiding?
Because I'm not a barber. I'm not a cosmetologist. I don't do chemicals. I don't have chemicals. I don't shave faces. I don't cut hair. What I do is indigenous to me as an African woman, and I pass this art down to my children, and I want to pass it down to the next generation. And this has nothing, absolutely nothing to do with them teaching me how to alter the state of my nappy hair or my natural hair or my curly hair. It has everything to do with my identity as an African braider.
Now, Texas is talking about lifting a lot of regulations on barbers and cosmetologists across the state. How does it feel that your struggle could lead to other businesses seeing less red tape? It's got to feel good.
It does feel good, because I never went into this fight for myself. I always thought about the industry as a whole.
Isis Brantley is the owner of the Institute of Ancestral Braiding in Oak Cliff. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
A new study concludes not a single city in Texas is a particularly vibrant art center. Dallas is not even in the top 20. The study was released by SMU's National Center for Arts Research. It measures the cultural vitality of large and small urban areas. What the study calls arts vibrancy is based on things like how many arts and cultural groups there are and the levels of government and nonprofit art support. So who's number one? Washington, D.C. New York finished third. In Texas, Houston ranked 82nd, Dallas 85th, and Fort Worth number 230. The top Texas city, Austin, was 62nd. Watch a video tour of the top arts vibrant cities at artandseek.org. We'll turn now to the birth of a play. And just a heads up, this one's got some strong language in the title. Jonathan Norton was assigned a paper like the other students who journeyed through the South on the 2011 SMU Civil Rights Pilgrimage. He convinced his professor to let him write the first act of a play instead. That play, which is called Mississippi Goddamn, premieres at the South Dallas Cultural Center next month. 2 years ago, Norton remembered the moment of inspiration, his visit to the Jackson, Mississippi home of slain civil rights activist Medgar Evers.
He was murdered in his driveway while getting out of his car. His wife, Merle Evers, tried hard to remove his dried blood from the pavement, but his blood still stains the ground and serves as a constant reminder of his assassination. Our tour guide explained that the Evers were not welcomed in their neighborhood. Medgar traveled a lot in his duties as NAACP field secretary, and Merle was often left home with the kids, worrying about Medgar's safety, her children's safety, and she had very few friends to turn to. And I was shocked to learn that the neighbors wanted Medgar out because of his association to the NAACP. After hearing this story, a light bulb went off, and I began to imagine a play told from the point of view of a family that lives down the street from the Evers. And I began to imagine the farthest extremes his neighbors might go to get Medgar out. In fact, after his assassination, his neighbors made a pact to never utter a word about his murder for the next 10 years. And I still recall the uncomfortable stares my tour group got from his neighbors.
Norton will discuss the creative process along with Nicole Ray from Dallas Black Dance Theater tonight at Art and Seek's State of the Arts discussion. It's at the Dallas Museum of Art at 7 o'clock. For the evening, more rain tonight with a slight chance for snow and a low near 42. Tomorrow should be cloudy. Slight chance for snow before noon with a high about 49. You can like KERA News on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. From the KERA Newsroom, I'm Justin Martin.
Alabama's got me so upset. Lurleen Wallace has made me lose my rest. Everybody knows about